Welcome to Attorneys Are Human Too, with your host Steve Wallace and your co-host Selena Music, both of the Wallace Law Group. Episode 6, Is Politics a Combat Sport? Part 2, featuring Dr. Andre Fladell, the Prince of Palm Beach County. So let's jump right into it. So in light of all the crazy things that are going on, which causes me not to watch the news these days, do you believe that democracy is working in the 21st century?
That's an excellent question. In 1941, the United States was bombed at Pearl Harbor. They decimated our Navy and took us in what was really a pretty destructive attack. Between 1941 and 1945, in 4 years, we beat imperialistic Japan and recovered the entire Pacific Rim and the Asian continent and freed it. We invaded Europe. We beat fascist Italy, took North Africa, freed it. We beat the Nazis in Germany, we freed it. We went into 14 different countries in a half a dozen different languages. We rebuilt and freed half the world in 4 years. Today, in 4 years, we can't widen one lane on I-95 between West Palm Beach and Boca.
Wow.
When you think that in 4 years, Henry Ford built the entire Industrial Revolution, we became from an agricultural society to a manufacturing society, built the assembly line, formed the greatest industrial complex that the world had ever seen at that time in 4 years. Today, in 4 years, you can't get a permit on an atomic energy plant passed. The United States of America is no longer functioning at any rate that's comparative to the world under the new way the world works. If the economy of this country changes, and it changes in a week or a month, we can't change our policies or practices for a year. We're now driving a boat which is heading into an iceberg, and we don't have a steering mechanism that allows us to turn away from the iceberg. In other societies, in other countries, whether you like the freedoms of the individuals, which is a separate conversation, those governments make decisions, make quick decisions, and make quick policy changes. There is nothing we do in this country anymore that the left thinks the right did right or the right thinks the left did right. And there is nothing anymore that this country does to avoid its own peril. It's heading straight forward. It's heading straight forward on three different levels. And at the end of the day, no world power exists forever any more than the USSR existed, any more than the sun never sets on the British Empire, any more than Rome, any more than the Greeks. Our system is doomed unless we find a way to make it more functional, which at this point it is not.
So along those lines, if the Prince of Palm Beach County had his magic wand, what changes would you institute to make government and democracy more efficient and more successful?
I'd take all the districts that are pro-Democrat or pro-Republican, and I'd square them off with a cookie cutter. I'd take all the gerrymandering that's been done so that different parties can run different districts, and I'd make them cookie cutter so that the middle can get elected, not the left and the right in primaries. When you have a Democratic district, if you don't run to the left, you can't win the primary. When you have a Republican district, if you don't run from the right, you can't win the primary. So the ultimate winner of the district is someone who's a left or right extreme from their primary. That's how the country's been set, by the nature of the gerrymandering of districts. Had the districts been different and had the process been different, the middle would still exist as a third component of government, and the middle could negotiate, number one. Number two, the press has no regard for anyone who's elected for office and no courtesies or regard for office. The press is now as ill-mannered and rude as humanly possible to everyone. If you listen to how they talk to people and the things they say about people, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, I don't remember seeing him much in the wheelchair. And I don't remember when he got soaked in the Thanksgiving Day parade and they had to change his clothes and he pictures from the air seeing if he wore shorts or briefs or what kind of underwear he had. I don't think the things they talk about are not only unreasonable, people don't need to know half the conversations they're having. If, for example, recently you have the Russians who are paying to have Americans killed in Afghanistan, they forgot to mention that we armed the Sunnis to shoot down Russians with, we gave them Stinger missiles to shoot down Russian planes. That was fine. we armed the Sunnis in the USSR. We've been arming more armies to kill more people in more places. So they're doing to us what we're doing to them. I don't think any of it should be on the news. I think these are national security issues that should be handled internally. Once it goes on the news, it mucks up the process, and the news is never really objective or middle. So my answer to you is follow. One, districts have to be made so that a middle can get elected, and that's not going to happen unless the courts at some point take over the mapping system and they do away with all this good intent, once upon a time, 1960s mindset that you got to make every different district, some for the farmers and business people and some of the Caucasians and some for the African Americans. We need to cookie cutter our country and let the middle get elected. That won't happen. And secondly, commentary news should be commentary news and news reporting should be news reporting. And when a Senate or House committee has a secret meeting, I don't want to hear about it as the meeting's going on. Why should I know what's going on? If you have a secret meeting, a behind closed door meeting, why should I listen to the information in that meeting? What's healthy about that? Why pretend it's closed door if the news is reporting it within 15 minutes anyway? So I think our country's lost its mind. I think we report things that happen in combat in the war, like we have embedded reporters. They should never be allowed to show a war while the war is going on. Because if you show me a picture of Delray, I know the street it's on by looking at the house. When they're showing us pictures of American troops going through cities, we don't know which city it is, but the people who live there know what street it's on. So the fact that they report news about war live, it should all be delayed 24 hours. The fact that they put secret meetings of Congress and Senate, it should be criminal. It should be, the leaker should be, I don't care, again, forget Republicans, Democrats. You have to decide what the public needs to know and what's not in the public purview. And the press making those decisions is like an animal that never gets tired of eating.
Selena, what would you like to ask the prince?
Well, to add to that question, what's your opinion about how this younger generation is handling politics? I mean, we see that the younger generation is more inclined to go out there and protest and are more vocal, although I'm not sure if they're more vocal, or it's because we have access to social media. And
then a lot of them don't vote. That's the other thing, that's the second part of it.
So, yeah, I want to know what your opinion is on this new generation.
First of all, being a protester by nature and being in SDS when I was a student, which is Students for a Democratic Society, and marching and protesting against everything I could think of, that's what college kids should do. What the younger people should do is complain, because there's always something good to complain about. So the fact that young people complain, that's healthy. When the young people stop complaining, then the social conscience of America ends, because the young people are the only pure complainers on some level. Well, let's go further. If in the 1960s there was organized institutional racism, separate bathrooms, couldn't go to college, couldn't eat in a restaurant, couldn't ride a bus, that all exists. We attacked that problem with affirmative actions, with set-asides, with a lot of interesting rules to try to balance it. It's now a half a century later. We're not talking about 10 years later. 1964, we're a half a century. In that half a century, we're back protesting the same thing. But it's not the same problem. They call it systemic racism. They call it institutional racism. That's not the problem. It's not a problem getting into college anymore. It's not a problem sitting on the bus or going to a restaurant. The problem is there's an inherent bias being taught to children by parents, which is a racist bias, which is no longer the institution, it's no longer the country, it's individuals. So if you approach this 2020 problem with a 1960 education mindset, you're going after the wrong problem and the wrong solution. If children between the ages of 4, 5, 6, and 7 are taught to have bias and hate, and they are by some people, you can't get to them when they're 18 and undo it, and it's not the country that's doing it. So I have a cop, and this cop is inherently biased, racist, whatever you want to call it. The police department isn't the problem. It's people within the police department, and there's a percentage, whether it's 4%, 3%. So when you attack the institution, you're missing your target.
That was going to be my next question, is how do you think we're handling these police departments across the nation?
I'll get to that as well. The United States of America at this point should be $26 trillion in debt. The younger people who are protesting don't conceive $26 trillion in debt because it doesn't mean anything to them. They don't understand how this country finances its debt. We finance our debt by having bond auctions around the world. The world no longer wants to buy our junk. They're only buying our junk because our bonds, it's like having a dirty shirts, and you're taking us to the dirty shirts. That's why they're buying us. We have $26 trillion in debt. At some point, the world's not going to be buying our make-believe money anymore. And when they fail to buy it, the economics and the inflation and the currency of this country are going to collapse. Young people don't see it. Let me tell you what young people see. They see their car payment. They see their electric bill. They see their phone payment. And they go, damn, cable TV is $140 a month and my phone's $120 a month. But $26 trillion doesn't matter because I don't understand it. $26 trillion means that somewhere in your lifetime, China's going to put this country out of business. $26 trillion means that this country pays every year $378 billion in interest on the debt, which the young people are going to inherit. They don't understand when they saw World War II, the Germans with wheelbarrows full of money, which is what caused the war, what they see Spain or Portugal or Italy or Greece in collapse economically now, that we're sitting on that list waiting to go down the trail with them. The reason this country isn't broke at the minute is because we're the world currency. And by being the world currency, everyone has to trade everything in dollars. So we have this make-believe security because of a make-believe world currency, which we're at. If for any reason we are no longer the world currency, within a week, the American dollar is going to be hitting the ground and it's going to hit hard and it's going to happen. China's planning for it. If you read what they're writing, if you look at their meetings, if you look at their government, they're setting it up through a policy called One Belt, One Road, Silk Road. If you don't know what that is, you need to look it up. It's explaining what they're going to do to this country. Back to you with your question of the police. You have to really look at educating children. Kids can't grow up separate, not growing up with each other. All kids have to grow up learning that they work as groups. You know, sports is a fascinating thing for males. When I'm a kid and I'm playing basketball in Brooklyn, whoever's the best basketball player is the guy on my team. I don't care if he's green or yellow. I'll take whoever shoots the best basket.
Yeah, my son plays basketball and he knows no color. And sometimes he'll say things and he'll say like, you know, so-and-so looks this way. And I said, it doesn't matter. We're all on the same team. And he doesn't see it in different.
I just want the guy who can bring down the rebound, the guy who can give me the best outlet pass.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, the kids, if you want to change the country, you take them from the age of 7 years and down, not seven and up, and you change the way they interact, the way they work. And if you're lucky in 10 years, your problem solved. If you think you're going to change the mindset of a 35-year-old cop, you'll get them to shut up. You'll get them to behave, but you won't. The way we hire them, the screening, the way the rules and regulations of how they function need to be addressed. But when you start saying cops are bad or police are bad, you have no idea the danger you're creating for yourself. There's no more lousy job in the world than being a cop. My dad didn't carry a gun when he went to work in the morning. When I was eight, I didn't watch my father put on a bulletproof vest to go to work. I didn't go to sleep at night. My father left for work at 8 o'clock at night and didn't come home till 7 in the morning. Cops are out all night when their family's alone. Cops' kids watch them wear bulletproof vests. Cops have to work with their families in the same cities that they arrest people. Cops don't wear guns for no purpose, and their marriages are less likely to be successful because they have no social life. If they're working in a shift and they want to get promoted, they've got to change to another shift or another detective or undercover. So whatever their friends are, whatever their wife's relationships are in time, they get thrown upside down every 3 years, every time they get changed to another part of their department. It's a lousy, garbage, junk job that they do uniquely well. Within that department, just like 10% of the chiropractors suck, 10% of the cops equally suck, not in personal counsel, 10% of the attorneys suck. And I'm telling you, 10% of almost every group of people that you can name has a really lousy component. But we don't judge them all by the component. But in policing, because it's news media worthy and because the news loves glorifying this crap, we've taken it out of context that 90% of the cops are really family people, Americans, understand all this, have children. We got whatever this number is, that's garbage. It's garbage in every single profession, but we decided to pick one because it's more visible for the moment. So I think that the target is wrong. I think that it's well-intended. I think that, like every other movement, as long as it stays intellectual, it'll be fine. Once it gets physical and violent, the movement will be self-destructive and have its own negative impact. So yes, I am pro-police all day, every day. I am anti-anyone that in any public situation is racist in any form. That's including anti-Semitism, which, by the way, is just another form of racism. You know, it's okay. You said about the Jews, that's okay, but you can't say about another group. I think they all stink. I think that each group should be offended for the other equally. And I think our target should be to change the way children see the world. And one more thought. The children are watching the news. The children are watching these interviews. The children are watching the protests. When I watch the protest, I hear the complaint. People are offended that they feel as a Black American, as an African American, that they haven't gotten an equal shake and that the world hasn't been good for their entrance into the society. But the 8-year-old kid resents it. When you have an 8-year-old white child, an 8-year-old Black child watching this on TV, what is he hearing? He's hearing the adults say, you ain't got a chance because this country's not helping you at all. He's not 17, 22. He's 10 years old. What do you think they're hearing from our messaging to each other when the 11-year-olds are now watching all this and hearing the messaging, life ain't good for you here. It's still garbage. He's not the nuances of the political change. He's being brought and raised into a very, very difficult argument that he shouldn't be part of, or at least be given the counter argument. So we're not gearing our news to the children. We're gearing to unique hits, advertising costs, ratings for the TV stations. But we're not projecting news for the children so that the children can understand the right and the wrong of things, because news is about sensationalism. It's not about the man who saved anybody. It's the man who harmed somebody. It's, you know, dog bites man, it ain't news. Man bites dog, it's all news.
Excellent. We'll lighten the mood a little bit. I like to pick your brain. You know that I have a political science degree, and you and I have talked ad nauseum for hours and hours about historical political figures. So I think our listeners would be curious to know, who in history is your favorite politician?
In this country, if I had to pick one to start with, I'd pick Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, who wrote himself the Declaration of Independence, wrote some fascinating concept. He said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these, a life, liberty, originally property, by the way, and the pursuit of happiness. That is the most remarkable concept and statement you could ever understand the brilliance of it. He believed that the rights of a human being were endowed by our creator, and he believed in God because he said, our rights are given to us by a creator. Yet the same man who writes this God-given country, a country under God with rights given from God, writes the Establishment Clause in the Constitution. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And he understood that between these colonies, there was these competitions, which remember, other than Maryland, which is why it's the free state, you had to be of the religion of the colony to hold office to come to Congress. You couldn't get elected if you weren't of the religion of the colony. And he didn't want one religious doctrine to overbalance the other. So he writes this constitution in these competing interests, which are actually brilliant, where he wants it to be a nation with morality under God, but he doesn't want the executive of one colony to overbear and threaten another. Similarly, in matters which he was involved with, although James Mason and other characters were involved with as well, Second Amendment rights, the right of having a standing federal army, yet having the public having the right to defend itself against the army that nobody really wants because they don't know why we have an army if we're not in a war. So Thomas Jefferson, if you look at what he wrote and you read even Madison's Federalist Papers, I think he's one of the most brilliant people who started the social experiment we call our republic, our democracy. I think he doesn't get enough credit. What they do is they blame him for being a part of his social time. In his social time, there was clearly an unevenness between races. There was clearly a lot of inequality. But similarly, at one point, women didn't vote in this country. At another point, women were supposed to just raise children. Those were social mores of a different period. I don't blame him for that. But I see his brilliance as extraordinary. Without him, I don't know that this country becomes what it becomes. So he would be my... And every time I read more about him, it's just more incredible. So, yeah, he would be my favorite.
Okay. So along those lines, who is your least favorite American politician in history?
Richard Nixon would be one I would go to easily. He was arrogant. He was rude. He was dishonest. I just never liked him. I didn't like the Checkers speech. That's when he put the dog in his lap and told everybody he loved his dog. People who commit treason against our nation, people who lie, not to protect, just lie to lie. So I have to go with Richard Nixon would probably be the one I find most detestable generally.
Okay. And who would you say is your favorite local or Florida politician?
In Palm Beach County, the greatest politician of my time was a guy named Harry Johnston. Harry Johnston was a congressman, president of the Florida Senate. He was the class of class. He was the gentleman of gentlemen. He could tell you no and love you. He was the best there ever was. In our current government, we have Mac Bernard and David Kerner have handled this virus eloquently. They have stepped up to the plate in a time when there's no playbook. It's not about being favored. It's about, I look to those two as really maturing. I know them both since they're very young. I know both of them very well. They both have grown up. They are both leaders and adults. They're both equitable and reasonable. They're sensitive. They're tough. They're smart. I'm proud of them. Lori Berman, Joe Abruzzo. We just have so many great kids that have really grown up and matured. Joe is now going to be clerk of the courts. Lori Berman is a senator. We are lucky. We have such a great depth of really great new people. And then there are people who are ascending. I think, you know, Bobby Powell is ascending. I think he's maturing beautifully. Oh, there's just so many. Steve Abrams was just brilliant. I just think we're lucky. We're inundated with some great characters in our county.
Okay, so then I guess to contrast that, who is your least favorite Florida or local politician historically? And then I guess you can, if you're obliged to say currently as well.
Historically, I didn't like Buddy McKay. I still don't. He was lieutenant governor. He ran for governor. I disliked him. In the end, I didn't really like Jeb Bush that much. I thought he was really very manipulative and only loyal to a small group. But the reason I don't like people in politics, once they are rude and they're personal and they go into personal attacks, the character assassinations, people are allowed to disagree with you and not be immoral or not be illegal or not be psychotic or not be un-American. There are people who are pro-life. I don't get it. I don't agree with it. I don't disrespect them. There are people who believe that there should be every day a religious prayer in a school. They're not immoral. They're not American. They're as American as you or me. When people start realizing that their opposition is allowed to be as have the same integrity you do, just come to a different conclusion, I like them. When people accuse other people of being criminals every time they disagree, and every time you see a politician get on TV and say, well, he's a crook and he's a liar, and they do that because they don't agree philosophically, I dislike them. I want them to be my enemies. They are my enemies. And then there's a group of people that are just jealous because they don't want to really debate on an issue. They'd rather say, I don't dress right, or I'm arrogant, or I have too much money, or I inherited from my dad. But the issue is, pick your issue and let's debate the merits. But they won't do that. Those are the people that won't like me, and I don't like them.
Female politician, would you like to see run for presidential candidate?
I like Tulsi Gabbard. I think she's just charming. I like Klobuchar for a while. I think she got nastier than she needed to be. She did if she was in a primary. I think she hurt herself. There's a number of females in Congress, and I'm not talking about AOCs or I'm not talking about, you know, there are a number of females in Congress on both parties I think would be excellent presidents. I don't know. I'm disappointed with all the people who've been running for president, all the nominees of the parties. I mean, John F. Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, Clinton, those are guys I liked. I haven't seen a lot of people I'm really thrilled about. Obama was really interesting and had great opportunity. You know, we supported him when he ran. Didn't work out exactly the way we figured, but at least, you know, you felt good about being an American. I'm not sure that any of these people make me feel that great about being an American right now.
Okay, I have a couple questions from our viewers that I'd like to ask you.
Sure.
The first question is, are political decisions still made in the back room, the smoky back rooms that a lot of folks have given you credit for?
They're better when they're made in the back rooms. That's the way government was intended to work. So let's explain those smoky back rooms. That means that Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, the Republican and the Democrat, would get drunk on Friday in the House and they'd come up and solve half the damn country's problems. It means that people, when they get done playing they hate each other, would go out to dinner or sit at each other's homes and go to each other's children's weddings, and they'd sit in rooms and they'd say, you know what? Find a middle. nobody finds the middle anymore because nobody has social relationships because there are no more back rooms because the back rooms are now with cell phones and social media and news reporters, and no one respects off the record conversations, so there aren't any. So as a result of no back rooms, things aren't getting done, and the country's in a frozen state of non-existence. We haven't changed our educational system. We're in the 19th century. Our economic social welfare systems are going to go bankrupt because we don't understand the age is no longer people dying at 68. So when they created Medicare in 1932, at 65, they only lived 3 years. They don't understand that the debt's going to break the country, that climate change is going to flood the coastal lines of Florida. Our country is reacting to nothing, solving no problems at all in any facet. So the backrooms don't exist and the country isn't solving a single problem.
Next question from our viewers. What is the dirtiest political trick that you would admit to and why?
I've done a lot of them. I continue. But in a race, when there's a Republican and a Democrat running, let's say there are two Democrats running in a primary and a Republican's running. The Republicans can't vote in that primary. What if the Republican dropped out, then the whole Republican Party can vote in that primary? The way that the government sets up is that if only Democrats run or only Republicans run in a primary election, the other party's allowed to vote in that election. So we have put candidates to run for office in this county for a party and then pull them out right before filing to allow the other party to vote in the primary of the opposite party. On top of that, we endorsed through mailers and flyers an endorsement for the candidate we wanted without the party's permission or approval. So we put candidates in a race. The candidate pulls out of the race, let's say, this is theoretically. Mm-hmm. And then the party then sends mailers, flyers, or endorsements out, which they've never authorized. By the time they know what went on, the race is over. Now, to be clear, there was no early voting at the time. So nobody was the wiser until after the election when they realized that these flyers and these endorsements, we have palm cards. We've put out 40, 50,000 of them. We've changed names on palm cards at the printer or made up duplicate palm cards of the same stock and color, took the original palm cards and substituted them. In other words, let's say there's a palm card that says Kings Point is for Kings Point or mm-hmm. Century Village for Century Village, and it tells people how the leadership wants them to vote. Mm-hmm. They get handed the box of exactly what they ordered, mm-hmm. and in distribution, they find out that they're giving out a palm card with a different name on it. So those things have been done.
Shame, Prince of Palm Beach County.
I think it's about taking people who we think are dangerous to the system and keeping them out of the system. So I don't call it shame. Nobody's harming physically anyone, but but if you're asking things that have been done, those things have been done, yes.
Okay, next question is, have you ever run for office? What was the result and what did you learn from it?
I ran for mayor of the city of Delray Beach. I ran in 77, 78 against Leon Weeks. Leon Weeks is the nicest, most wonderful, incredible human being I ever met. I have no idea why I did it. I lived in Delray, I think, a matter of weeks. When I went to speak at the forum was held by the Beach Property Owners Association, they wouldn't let me speak. They wouldn't even let me sit. Well, Leon, who is the incumbent mayor, was given his speaking. When it came to mine, they wouldn't even let me go to the mic. Leon, the guy I was running against, came down, got me, walked me to the mic, and gave me his time to speak because he was offended they wouldn't let me speak. He became one of my closest friends in Delray. I adored him. Sorry I ever ran against him. I apologize to this day. I ran because I wanted to make a difference and had no idea that was the dumbest thing I could have possibly done.
And so what did you learn from that?
Pay respect to people before you run for office. Don't think you're somebody because you're nobody. And as smart as you are and as much money as you got, when you're playing on another basketball court, you don't make the rules. Take the hits. Don't call fouls. Play the game. Become part of the group, and then you can rise through the group. In politics, the first thing you do is find out who's got their blood on the ground, and then learn to meet them, learn to respect them, learn to understand them. And if you're lucky, they'll bring you into their little game or group. but you don't challenge them as if you're smarter and know more and they're evil, because they're not. They're the ones that built the place that you're trying to govern. So what I made, the mistake I made was thinking I was somebody, when at the end of the day, I was absolutely nobody at that time.
You've actually given me the same advice when we spoke on a bunch of different occasions.
I kind of remember.
That's for another show and another day, but I've heard that before. Okay, next question is from my friend Beth Rappaport. She wants to know, how many hours a day do you play beach volleyball?
I'm on the beach every morning, usually by 8 o'clock. Sometimes you got games, sometimes you don't, but I play Saturday and Sunday. I play usually twice during the week, so I'm playing about four times. What's good is I'm playing doubles beach volleyball, and I'm clearly 25 years older than everybody I play with, and I'm holding my own. You know, I'm not what I would like to be, not what I could be, but I don't give the game away. You're going to have to come and beat me. You're not going to just, I'm not going to sit down and let you take it. It's very healthy. It's better than the gym for me. I can't lift weights. When I grew up and I was a kid, my parents told me if you lift something heavy, you should get paid for it. So I have a problem going to the gym and paying someone for lifting something heavy. It's inconsistent with everything I've ever learned. They told me to work with my mind, not my body. So volleyball becomes it's a good way to stay healthy.
A lot of cardio.
Yeah, cardio is real important. And we have a great social. Delray Beach Volleyball is the healthiest place. We have 120 kids. We've raised them. We stick with them. It's a social club. It's the way politics used to be. We used to be a family. Palm Beach County was a great family. We were actually better than most counties. Our Democrats and Republicans don't really hate each other as much as you think they do locally. We will do fairly well with each other. You know, it's just when you leave the county and you go into the state, the whole thing gets ugly.
Lightning round time. Ready? We're going to ask you five this or that's and answer it without any explanation.
I like this.
Mary McCarty or Bert Aaronson?
Oh, my God. Mary was the voice of the East and Bert was the voice of the West. It was like the Wizard of Oz. Mary, Boca Delray, Boynton Cities, but not for Mary, Delray wouldn't have turned out the way it did. She brought it from a 3-restaurant place to Bert took the West and the South County and gave us relevance. Everything was going to West Palm Beach. I'll take both any day.
Bill Clinton or JFK? These are hard questions.
JFK was my idol when I was a kid, and Bill Clinton charms me every time I ever had dinner with him. I love them both. I think Bill Clinton, in his moment, was incredible. JFK was like an image idol to me. I got to love them both.
Burgers or tacos? Hopefully you can choose between these. Beach or mountains?
Beach.
Sun or rain?
I love the winter. I love the summer. I love the sun.
Okay. Thank you so much. Prince of Palm Beach County, Andre Fladell, thank you for taking the time out and engaging us on our two-part series, Politics as a Combat Sport. And hopefully I want to offer this invitation to you. Will you come on again and cover an election preview for us?
Yeah, as long as the social media don't beat me up too bad.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Attorneys Are Human Too. Please subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast host. Please also leave us a 5-star review with your podcast provider. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we look forward to seeing you next time.